It's pretty easy to list the ruinous effects of digital revolution on the newspaper business. The obliterated classified ad sections, the infinite supply of competing content, driving down the value of adjacent advertising, ad blockers that directly block revenue, click-through rates on display ads that hover at close to zero, and slow loading of content and advertising on web and mobile that so frustrates users. And to all these problems, finally, perhaps, an answer. Social distribution. So now, another brief check-in on present and future business models to monetize the newspaper industry.
Present and future business models to monetize the newspaper industry.
Experiments on Google, Apple, Twitter, and especially Facebook all aim to enable papers to distribute their content directly via social channels. They harness both vastly larger audiences and, with the help of targeted data, maybe even higher ad rates. And as a bonus, pages load instantly, ensuring that the audience doesn't close out a page before it materializes on their phones. It's a potential bonanza, which is why many news organizations are dipping their toes into the social distribution waters, except for the Washington Post, which is cannonballing in with a large splash, announcing that it will feed 100% of its content to Facebook's instant articles in addition to its own website. That's a total of about 1,200 articles a day. Corey Hike is Executive Director of Emerging News Products for the Washington Post. Corey, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
I've been going around the world personally, because this is my bête noire, the last 10 years, telling people there are no magic beans. The financial model of newspapering is irrevocably broken. Now, I'm about to spend more or less the rest of this conversation trying to get you to admit that this is the end of the world as we know it. But first, would you tell me why this is the potential salvation that we've all been waiting for? Is this the magic beans?
Well, I like that you're saying magic beans and not silver bullet, because beans is plural. Yeah, maybe. Are you looking for monetary salvation? Are you looking for new ways to tell stories kind of salvation? Are you looking for audience growth salvation? I actually think this does all of them. But the idea that the distribution will now be available, and the understanding by the platforms that monetization is key and that we are important and we do need to stick around, and these are avenues to help that. Yeah, there's some beans. We could use some more beans, but I have to say, I'm really, really optimistic.
However, can I get to the howevers, Corey?
I had a feeling you might.
Yeah. However, Facebook has a long and growing history of changing the rules in the middle of the game. At one time, they attracted businesses, for example, to build up likes and reach users organically through their news feeds. And then, lo and behold, a little bit later, they said, no, well, actually, we're only going to feed your news to about 5% of the fans you've built up. But if you want to reach more of them, why, you can always buy advertising from Facebook. So isn't there a risk that eventually they're going to change the terms of the relationship?
They do that all the time. I think it's a mystery to folks that even work at Facebook. I don't feel like any of this is a real risk. I think the risk actually is to not try it. We really are working with Facebook to ask us questions about how things are working and what features we're interested in seeing. It's been a collaborative project that way. And so I feel pretty confident that we could flag something if it felt like it was risky or shaky for us, or we were seeing a trend that we were alarmed about.
Well, as long as we're speaking of trends, let me just look a little bit over the horizon. We certainly know that Facebook's EdgeRank algorithm favors higher engagement, more sharing. And clearly, it's also in the Washington Post's financial benefit to get page views, because that means advertising revenue. Will the Post have the incentive to veer off mission to produce more and more of what EdgeRank is going to pass along to begin with, the rest of it being suppressed because it's just not tasty enough?
This is not a new concern for folks that like to talk about, you know, the potential threat of social and user controls on what people see and all of that. It certainly hasn't changed the kinds of content that we create and that we go after. It's actually given us a lot of opportunity.
I guess my question ultimately is, if a five-part series on, you know, maybe states cutting back Medicaid falls in the forest and everybody is on their smartphones reading about the Kardashians, does the first story make a noise?
When Twitter Moments launched a couple of weeks ago, one of the most popular moments that we produced was our Caliphate series. We did some really important reporting around that. Kevin Sullivan is a correspondent over there who did some work. And, you know, that's not necessarily one of the most read stories on our site, but it does get some traction, of course. And we did our best to promote that. And Twitter promoted that moment for us. And Kevin Sullivan gained close to 1,000 new followers on Twitter because of that. I feel pretty good about that. And I think that we can balance all of those things for sure.
I'm wondering, once you train people to go to Facebook for their news, or Google or Apple or Twitter, and they get accustomed to that, if you decide that it's threatening your editorial sovereignty at the Washington Post, can you ever train your own readers to go back?
Thinking about it in terms of, you know, our only goal is to have people come directly to us, it's myopic. That's not how any of this works anymore. You know, our core business of people subscribing to the Washington Post is, it's a strong one digitally, and it's growing. And a lot of that is happening by way of these other platforms. People that would have never been exposed are now being exposed and can make a decision about whether they'd like to become a subscriber or a more engaged user coming to us directly. It sounds like a pipe dream, but it's actually real. That's happening. We're definitely not shutting down our URL. I mean, not on my watch.
Is your watch an Apple Watch?
My watch is definitely an Apple Watch.
I want to ask you about Google and Facebook and Twitter as a group. They all kind of coalesced to create these new distribution mechanisms all at the same time. Suddenly, is this noblesse oblige? They're really interested in helping deliver journalism to citizens. They could have been developing buy buttons instead. Why all of a sudden these beans, magic or otherwise?
I simply think it's, in a word, mobile. That's where the growth is. And they saw that these audiences were consuming news. They weren't just reading all of the scary things that we're worried about them reading. The Kardashians, for example. We're just at a place where, as news organizations, we're pivoting to be more product-oriented in how we approach things and thinking about how we develop. And we've all built native apps at this point and understanding the importance of those. And it all kind of came together at the same time. We'd like to fix mobile. We see a real opportunity for better storytelling there because people actually want to consume it, and they are. So let's do it.
Corey, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Corey Hike is Executive Director of Emerging News Products for The Washington Post.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.